Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
You know, Mona, EB5 has powered a lot in this economy, a lot of companies and a lot of jobs and a lot of different industries. And one of those is IT, but it can be somewhat confusing for a lot of foreign investors.
Oh, very much, Mark. I think IT is one of those fast-growing industries which are really out there looking for capital, because traditionally, IT gets funded not by banks, but by angel investors, vulture capitals. Oh, sorry.
Venture capital. We heard that.
Venture capitals. The problem is EB5 investors are too used to a very typical type of EB5 project. Right, Rebecca?
Yeah, like we always say, vanilla projects, and technology does go outside of that. And that's why today, Mona, we're having the second episode of our industry series, which will focus on technology and how that works with EB5, job creation, and return of capital.
Interestingly, though, before we dive into that, I do want to remind you, do you remember when we did that episode during the middle of COVID when there was the lockdown and we were looking at counter-cyclical projects? What came out right on top? The technology.
Yep. Yeah. So I think it'll be a very interesting podcast today.
Well, we're not going to make it easy for them. That's for sure.
And helping us explore this today in this industry series, focusing specifically on information technology, is Vincent Hines and Chuck Kakani.
Thank you very much for having me on the Global Investment Voice podcast. My name is Vince Hines, and I'm a technologist, and I work in transportation, particularly with EB5 investment projects.
Hey, thanks, Mona and Rebecca. And Mark, it's my pleasure to be here. I'm Chuck Kakani, for everyone's benefit, and I'm one of the managing partners at American Growth Gateway Capital. We have a project in EB5 Direct Pool project called TADA.
So, Vince, you have been involved with EB5 in the past, haven't you?
Yes, I've worked in a company where EB5 capital was raised in the transportation industry, actually.
It was raised in the transportation industry, but it wasn't in the technology industry. There's a little difference?
Well, yes. I mean,
you're going to tell us that technology was a real part of the project.
Yes, I would say pretty much every company that you're in business with today is using technology to some extent, you know, whether it's something physical, something that involves the internet, cloud. So pretty much any company can benefit from technology to help people do what they need to do.
Right. But where we're trying to get at, where Rebecca and myself are really trying to get at, is that a lot of people have trouble in understanding how EB5 can operate with technology and how it operates within certain industries. And as we know, you know, good lawyers always know the answers to the questions before they ask. But as we know that you have been involved in the transportation industry and your role really is technology, we thought you would be the best person to answer these questions.
Well, in transportation, everybody has a situation where they need to schedule things, know where they're going, make sure they're meeting customer needs, and technology can help in all of these areas at various levels.
That's true. Let's take your specific experience in the EB5 industry, in the EB5 sphere, rather, in the transportation industry per se. Did you feel that technology itself affected job creation? Meaning, do you think technology had anything to do with bringing in more jobs, or was the technology aspect outsourced to contract workers?
Well,
given your experience.
Yes. In my experience, we tend to now have a bit of both. Obviously, you know, in a transportation industry, you're dealing with real people that are right in front of you. So oftentimes the back office support people need to interact with them, not only through, you know, some form of voice or text or data communication. Often they do need to kind of interact with them directly. We also do have situations where it doesn't matter really where you are in terms of supporting somebody that's performing an action. you know, picking up a passenger, delivering a package or something like that. So it's a kind of a mix that you have to fine tune based on your organization. There's always going to be the right amount of technology people that are in the local area that are supporting using technology, and perhaps some people that might be, you know, farther away, even overseas.
Rebecca, I think he's skirting the answer here. All right, let me ask you again. But thank you, Vince. That was a great answer, and we do appreciate that. But I think our listeners really want to understand whether or not technology or tech-based projects have a component of job creation. And what I understood from what you're saying is no and yes. No, because some of the positions could be outsourced, and yes, because they enhance the actual project. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. But when we get down to it, what you're creating is a system in order to accomplish a set of goals. A system comprises technological components and human components. So there's really not a situation where a project couldn't create jobs that's technology-based that is used to do various tasks in transportation.
Well, Vince, so going along with that, you know, a lot of times you hear AI, artificial intelligence, and of course, this is taking it to another level, but with the technology that's coming in and the infrastructure that it's building within the transportation industry, would it undercut administrative jobs or other positions? As you said, you know, it could work hand in hand, but do you think technology is going to, you know, is it creating more jobs in respect to administrative jobs, or is it taking over other job positions that could have been created?
Well, directly, if you're looking at administrative jobs, I do feel that over time, those jobs will tend to be reduced. However, when you do mention things like AI, we also have situations where we have to train these AI. Correct. And in a lot of cases, the vendors do a lot of work in that training, but often it requires people that are familiar with the space that you're working in order to actually train those models to work efficiently. Hmm. So certain types of jobs that are somewhat repetitive, somewhat mundane, somewhat tedious, I do feel that those will reduce. But I also think they will be replaced by jobs that will be, perhaps you might say, higher skilled, and basically very much attuned to the solution space that you're working in.
Interesting. But you know, Vince, I think within the sphere that you really understand and the sphere that you're focused on, again, in transportation, have you seen in the last few years, I should say, a falling off of companies who have not really upgraded with technology? Is it really absolutely necessary for a company to be right on top of technology to be successful?
Personally, I feel that it is. Everybody wants quicker, faster, cheaper. And the proper application of technology, not over application, but proper application, is the most effective way for you to get there in terms of accomplishing your goals and containing costs. So when you see places that don't make the proper level of investment, they tend to fall behind their competitors. They lose advantages in marketing. And eventually, your customers are going to go somewhere else for a better experience.
Oh, wow. Mark, did you know that?
I did not.
Well, it's about the experience.
It makes sense now that I hear it.
Well, I mean, as an example, when you talk about a customer experience, little surveys that you do, you know, in terms of how are we doing, other type of engagement strategies that you see in apps, you know, that provide the ability for customers to give feedback. I'm sure anybody that has a business and, you know, has come across things like Yelp or Google Business is very, very aware of the power of the positive review and the power of the negative review if you get them. So taking those into consideration and having a technological-based response that enables your employees or associates to be able to hop on those problems or enhance the good things can only help.
Yeah, is it difficult for projects to stay up to date and adapt to new technology?
Yes, it is. The pace of technology is maddening in some cases. The thing that's actually even worse, though, is deciding in some cases what you shouldn't do, right? Because the technology, you know, in some cases being cutting edge isn't always the best thing. Sometimes being the first mover isn't always the best thing. So being able to cast a wide net in terms of your knowledge about what's going on, and then being able to digest that and analyze when, where, and how you should deploy it in your own space is really the trick.
Now, Vince, you are a wealth of knowledge when it comes to this area. But to be fair, and Rebecca, I think you would agree that Vince is really speaking about a technology component within an EB5 project.
Yeah, correct. And within the transportation industry itself and creating an EB5 project. But Mona, I think what we have coming up next, who we're going to introduce, is we have a project that's all technology-based versus being within another industry.
That's right, Rebecca. Now let's shift our focus over to Cheick Kakani.
So welcome, Cheick. You just heard Vince talk about the technology as a component within an EB5 project. I think it's not that common, though, to have technology projects as EB5 projects themselves.
Yep. So, Mona, thinking about this, I think tech is everywhere. It's hard today to see tech as an industry, or is it a component? I think you'll be hard-pressed to find anything today in the modern world that doesn't touch tech. So whether it's fully technology-oriented or part of it, it doesn't matter. As a matter of fact, the project that we have, Tada, touches many areas of life. Supply chains touch almost every area of human life today.
I hear you, Cheick. Yes. But here's the thing. Okay. The average EB5 investor is not that familiar with IT. They might understand that technology is everywhere, but they don't feel that technology works within EB5, which is why we asked Vince specifically about whether or not we thought technology affects job creation. We are going to ask you a couple of questions, well, maybe more than a couple, relating to this. Number one. And I have heard this many, many times from investors. Why should I invest in technology when it doesn't have any assets?
Great question, Mona. Frankly, when people talk about assets, I think they have a wrong view. I'll give you an example. Today, the most valuable company in the world is Microsoft at $2.2 trillion as of today. Okay, so does it have assets? And think about car companies, Mona, Rebecca. Tesla is the most valuable car company. $800 billion in valuation. The second most valuable car company is Toyota or Honda. Okay, think about the difference. That's $250 billion. So what are all these companies with so-called huge assets doing? So in reality, data and software are the new assets. So it's a myth out there, and understandably so, that many people can't see it. It's abstract. They think of tech as not having assets. But that's not really true. If you dig a little bit deeper, it is assets. It's real assets. Markets value them as such.
I think even for myself, I think for wrapping our heads around it, is the fact that it's not tangible, right?
Yes.
It's out there. It's a cloud. It's all software-based. So how do you reach out to people to explain how does this industry work? How can investors actually see the value in this project?
So the value that a piece of technology or a company provides to its customers is about productivity gains, right? Either you make more money or you save on your expenses. Okay. What good tech products do is that they save their customers millions, tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of dollars by using it. So for instance, if we take supply chain software, where our project is located in, right? Supply chain sector. A single customer can save, we have a customer instance where they saved about $25 million. So what would you pay for something that you have $25 million gains in, savings in? So would you pay $1 million? By the way, this customer pays us close to $1 million a year, right? So in B2B, business to business space, you know, companies which are tech companies often save their customers tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars.
I think, Vince, this is something that you had alluded to as well, that technology definitely enhances the project and definitely enhances the company. However, I'm going to ask you, Cheick, really does it, when we're talking about EB5 and we have to talk about job creation requirements, you know, many tech companies really rely on outsourced labor and jobs.
Yeah. Mona, that's how it seems to me. It's not reducing the job count or outsourcing the jobs. It's about what kind of jobs. All tech does is shifts jobs from one type to another. Okay. we are never going to get rid of where human beings have to perform certain things, right? For example, you must have heard Tesla hired 100,000 people in the last 1 year, you know, or something like that. You know, some. So think about it. So when you see some projects, when people think about outsourcing, not all technology projects or not all IT projects are the same. You know, people think of jobs going away to Bangalore, India, or Philippines, or Romania, or something like that when they think about IT, right? But the fact is, there are many, many technology companies that needs to have its employees locally, jobs here now, but they can sell to anywhere in the world. That's the beauty of it, right? There's no geographic restriction on the kind of customers they can service in all continents, everywhere. Those are revenues. So when you ask me about jobs, Mona, Rebecca, it is, I think it's to do with revenues, not really about outsourcing. You know, can this tech project, can this company bring in lots of revenues? And do we need people to enhance and to work in this company to make those revenues happen?
Vince, do you agree?
Yes, I do. The thing is that people look at various modes of operating their businesses for lots of reasons. I mean, there's outsourcing in just about every endeavor, including even the law. For example, mm-hmm. I worked with a company maybe about 15 or 20 years ago where their paralegals were in the Philippines and in India due to the fact that the legal systems there are similar to the ones here. Mortgage processing, for example. But a lot of times that's really just for cost. But when you're developing a project that is using technology in a deep and very connected way, you often need to have resources right, you know, locally available to do so.
That's a good point. But Chuck, I'm going to make this a little harder. Okay, we have job creation. We have job creation, but how many jobs can you create within, you know, you said it's revenue based. So is it every time you increase revenue, you need more employees, or is it just one person that could come in and handle the entire software platform? How do you create X amount of direct jobs for us to be able to work for EB5 and that helps the company overall?
Right. And remember, when we are talking about EB5 jobs, we're talking about physical, direct people, W-2s, 35 hours a week.
Mm-hmm. So Mona and Rebecca, if you don't mind, in a lighter way, do you know this? There are AI softwares that claim to replace lawyers. How do you feel about it?
Let them try.
I'm just kidding, but you see the point, right? Anyways, coming back to your question, not all companies are same. Not all technology is same. For instance, Tada, the project that we have, requires implementation. Guess who does it? It is people locally here who are trained with a undergrad degree from a local university, say in Illinois or Ohio or Nebraska, that can actually put this software together. So you need people to implement the software, okay? You don't need really techie people to implement it. You need reasonably educated, bright people to implement. And by the way, don't let anybody tell you that we don't have such people in America. That's another myth. You know, you'll say, oh, what's going on with us? You know, we don't have enough engineers. You know, all these are, many myths are out there. But in reality, America still, even today, is at the top of the food chain in tech. Remember, where all these valuable tech companies come in the world.
It is. They are
in the US.
It is, Chuck. I totally agree with you there. However, and I totally agree that not all IT projects are the same, just like not all real estate projects are the same. But IT projects, tech projects are prone to specific risks. They could be considered much more riskier than, say, a hotel project, such as cybersecurity, hacking, technology malfunctions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll give you a viewpoint, Mona.
Absolutely, that they're more risky?
Yeah, you know, yes and no. I'll tell you why. In fact, they're as risky as anything else or as less risky as anything else. Let me give you an example. How many times have you gone to a shop and they say they can't take your money because their systems are down? So it doesn't matter whether somebody is in a hotel industry or a doctor's office. If their IT systems are down, can they take payments? Can they process or do anything today in today's world? So in reality, it's not fair to just single out tech and say, oh, that's risky compared to this. No, tech you know, pervades everything today in modern life. So whatever risks that tech contains, tech products and tech companies contain, they have, that's a risk that everybody has today because tech is everywhere.
Well, yeah. And I think one thing that Vin said, which was really is interesting, that you have to keep up, be staying up to date, and it's very difficult to stay up to date, is important because it shows that this is a constantly changing and constantly in need industry.
And evolving.
Constantly evolving, yes.
Absolutely. So the people that are closer in a pure tech play, right? Like, think about it. Amazon, why was Amazon able to take over retail? Is it a retail company? Is it a tech company? You know, the same question. Is Tesla a car company or a tech company or a software company?
I know, but Chuck, but you are speaking about the handful of few like Amazon and Microsoft.
Yes.
Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. You don't have Amazon or Microsoft. You have a smaller company. Yes. Vince deals with a smaller company. Let's just deal apples with apples and not apples with grapefruits. Right now, with a smaller company, isn't it more risky that a bigger crocodile comes in and gobbles you both up?
Yes, you know, that is true in general. But you need to see what kind of company it is, right? Like I always say, Mona, it's not tech as a big bucket. EB5 investors don't invest in tech industry or a tech sector. They're investing with a project, remember, right? So let's compare apples to apples. There is a smaller company that is fast growing. You know, small means we are not too small, by the way, a couple of $100 million in valuation. And compared to the big players out there that might look small, but a company like Tada, like I'm talking about our project, is nimble enough to ward off all these threats. In fact, it's how fast can you adapt? Bigger size doesn't necessarily mean that people can adapt and they can ward off these threats. Remember dinosaurs, what happened to them? They were pretty big. Right. So tech industry always has upcoming players always start out small and they have tendency to take over and expand and become very, very successful. That happens in tech all the time.
Well, what about Chuck, as far as the EB5 is concerned, obviously investors are looking at job creation as a whole, but return of funds, right? Mm-hmm. Your project, as we said, you know, it's all software based. There's no tangible, like for instance, if a hotel goes down tomorrow, land, they still have land. What is it that you would have if something happens with the project tomorrow? What is it that you can, investors can feel safe or, you know, at least, obviously it's an at-risk project, but what can they look to see that if something happens, there's this return of funds?
Oh, Rebecca, that's an excellent question. In fact, if rents in a hotel, for example, you know, like since you mentioned it, yeah, rents are there. But what if COVID forces closure, right? Like we saw in 2020. Mm-hmm. But if you see tech companies, there is something about tech, the availability of capital at various stages of a company in the growth life cycle of a company that I believe most other companies don't have. And let me explain. A tech company or a tech project has angel investors, right, in the beginning. Then they have venture capital, what we call Series A. Then they have seed after angel, seed capital. Then there is Series A, B, C, D. VC firms come in and they're able to supply the kind of capital infusion that's needed for tech companies. Then there are the other end are growth equity companies, private equity companies, leverage buyouts, and finally the Nirvana, the IPO, right? Initial public offering. So if you see a tech company's life cycle, there are many, many gates or points at which you have, you know, ability to raise funds continuously. No other sector has that kind of availability of capital at so many different points in the life cycle of a company. So in my opinion, now I might be biased, Rebecca, but in my opinion, you know, projects like ours, tech companies, especially, you know, cutting edge technology, have access to capital. So what does an investor need? You know, investor needs that the project create jobs, right? Jobs depend on revenues. Okay.
And you're like going to bring me back. You're going to bring me back to my sure. Those questions, those difficult questions, Chuck. And I'm going to ask Vince's question.
Walking into a trap, Mona.
Yeah. Well, I know it. Actually, I did want to jump in on Rebecca's a question about return of funds. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things about technology companies, and not tech necessarily particular to them, though, is the fact that you have the opportunity in a lot of cases to be earning money as you're going along. Mm-hmm. So, you know, investors should be interested in that. Generally, scaling, you know, not only involves just technology, but it tends to also involve people, support people, people doing training, You tend to expand your back office when you're doing these things, sales, things like that. The other thing is that if you're able to navigate your space in a creative way, you're generating intellectual property, and you may actually have an exit that's before an IPO. I mean, I'm pretty sure that most of your investors would be extremely happy to have a company that was purchased by Microsoft or SAP or, you know, in the logistics space, Salesforce or something like that, because they were doing something interesting and innovative. So, you know, you have many opportunities to not only have revenue coming in as you're growing, but you may actually be a company where partnering with a larger firm in the space, allowing them to enter quickly, is a very viable option, and it happens all the time.
Yeah. So Mona, here's what I'm hearing. I hear two key words, and these are our favorite words: scalability.
Yes.
And countercyclical.
I love it. But I'm sorry, guys. I'm still stuck on the jobs. Mm. I'm going to ask two questions from both of you. Will having direct employees rather than contractors hurt the company profits because they cost more? You don't have to have direct employees for technology. Contractors often work just as well. And I'm going to ask you, Vince, also, tech-based jobs, specifically app and software development, onboarding, are they ever permanent positions or are they just contractual?
Well, they are. But here's an interesting thing if you look at what's going along, you know, in the world today. When people talk about app development, a lot of people automatically think about, you know, people doing it somewhere else. India, China, Philippines, Eastern Europe. But guess what? We're down to probably one of the last regions in the world where you can outsource that hasn't been tapped before. That's sub-Saharan Africa. So what happens after we have tons and tons of firms in sub-Saharan Africa working in software development? Guess what? They're going to start servicing local markets, just like the same thing that happened in India, China, Philippines. So the thing is like the ability to, you know, kind of do work for places that are bigger and, you know, further down the tech road than you are. That's how you start in the game. How you stay in the game and the end game is actually taking those resources and using them locally. Look at India as a perfect example. Many, many, many of your tech companies now are founded in India with people that work there locally, and the product is exported all around the world. So the thing is things are coming kind of full circle. Doing development in America is totally something that can be done and is being done.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I often say to people, everybody in the world has the internet and the TV. So the disparity in cost is shrinking because everybody wants the same things.
Yeah, great point, Vince. If I may add, Mona and Rebecca, these are amazing points. In fact, all the unicorns in India last year, India had the highest number of unicorns after Silicon Valley, 26 of them, I think, if I'm correct. And they are all serving the local markets. And there's something called insourcing today. I don't know if you heard of this term. It's no longer economically advantageous to have operations somewhere else. Mm. In fact, you can very well do it in Utah. You can do it in Illinois, in Peoria, right? You can do this operations and management of implementation of the software right here in the US. That gap is shrinking rapidly. And there's a new term, used to be outsourcing, was all rave 10 years ago, 15 years ago. It's now insourcing. Coming to specifically to Tada, you know, our product is, we have some serious patents pending and some patents awarded. You know, with our tech, why would we want this to go outside the United States? You know, why would we risk that?
But what about the cost of direct employees versus contractors?
Yeah, yeah. Coming to that, yes. That's a great question. Very good question. In fact, our experience has shown us that when you hire people permanently, all things said, it actually, in the long term, turns out to be cheaper because you're not spending time training when there is certain skill set involved. How many contractors can you bring in and you give all this valuable training and they're gone? Why would companies do that? So we see a trend too in good jobs that are direct jobs, permanent jobs, full-time W-2 jobs locally. Many companies are actually preferring that too. So there's a good mix. And depending on the operations, it's a mix between contractors and full-time employees. What we see with product like Tada, a company like Tada, is that we prefer our employees to be in the Midwestern United States, in Peoria, Illinois, and surrounding areas. We prefer to invest in them We prefer to train them. We prefer to retain them for a longer time. Why? Because people tend to stay loyal, at least in Middle America, where many of our jobs are created, and would stick with this company when the pay is good and the company has invested in them.
You know, Vince and Chuck, this has been really interesting because I will tell you, honestly, we have put together several tech projects and they always give me a migraine, to say the least. And these issues, I know it's not just me. Investors find it hard. They want to like technology. They want to invest in technology, but they find it hard to wrap their head around, will I get my money back and how is the job creation? So I don't think we could have said it better. Don't you agree, Rebecca?
I completely agree. I think we wrapped that up very nicely. And we thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you, Rebecca. Thank you, Mona. It was a pleasure.
Yes, thank you both very much. I really enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.